Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hello, dear friends. I'm your head mister, Lord Stefan Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And together we are the Misters of the Misters of the Dark! Don't shut up! Ugh, whatever. Join us wherever you stream your favorite podcasts, or go to mistersofthedark.com, where we'll be discussing all things horror, from films and books to everything in betweensies. We also have the occasional victim. I mean, guest.
Only on the Fearscape Media Network.
Shut up, Lance! Oh, I always get the last laugh.
Hi, friends. This is Kelly with Wishful Drinking and Binge Thinking, the podcast where I get just absolutely hammered and I dole out psychological advice. That's right, I am going to be more drunk than that girl you met in the bar bathroom after your karaoke set who said, "You have such good stage presence, oh my god." That's right, zero preparation, multiple drinks, countless profound gems. Tune in the last Monday of every month on Fearscape Media Network.
Thank you for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. We are on a journey to understand and to discover the phenomena that seems to exist all around the globe. We invite you to join us on this journey into the unknown.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic, and boy, I'll tell you tonight, this is going to be a learning episode, but another fantastic educational episode of Fearscape Paranormal here on the Fearscape Media Network. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the hybrid himself, Mr. Josh Rutledge. What's happening, sir? What are you a hybrid of? I would say a Twinkie and a Care Bear.
Okay. All right. I was going to something like a tomato and a grapefruit, but sure.
Gross. Great. I'm trying to merge those together. Tomato
and grapefruit.
Yeah. Tomato.
You know, the tomato is definitely present when I get really like embarrassed. You know, my face turns all really red, you know.
So. Oh yeah, dude, you and my friend Paul, dude, I always say you guys turn straight tomato when you're embarrassed.
Yep.
So. Cracks me up.
So anyways, yeah, definitely, man, the show tonight. Obviously we pre-recorded the interview portion, so I can say that, get ready for the rabbit holes that you will go down.
You will go down under, because our guest tonight is coming all the way from Australia, author of Children of Orion. We are talking to Ryan Musgrave Evans. This man, I would say, is the, in my opinion, the spiritual successor to Mac Tonies. Who was, I believe, was the first person to coin the term crypto terrestrial. But Ryan not only will be talking about crypto terrestrials, but he'll be sharing a lot of his own experiences with them.
And a lot of good, you know, I think, you know, you and I both left the interview very kind of jazzed up about the conversation, the way that it went. It kind of helped for us solidify, or at least not solidify, but at least reinforce some of our own theories to hear them, you know, from somebody else on the other side of the globe. So, yeah.
So full title, Children of Orion, Finding the Crypto Terrestrials. Crypto terrestrial is similar in a lot of ways to ultra terrestrials, though crypto meaning hidden, terrestrials meaning earthlings. So hidden earthlings, and I think Ryan even describes that later on. But yeah, these are entities, or well, he wouldn't say entities. Entities almost makes it feel like they're non-corporeal, but
I would say
humanoids, alien-type humanoids.
Let's let Ryan tell.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just excited because I want people to be pumped about it because we had such a fantastic conversation. Yeah. And we usually always like talk to our guests for a few minutes after the fact. I think we sat for an extra half hour after we had stopped recording and just kept talking to Ryan. And what an amazing guy. I think you guys are going to really dig this. What an amazing conversation. And again, Ryan Musgrave Evans, author of Children of Orion, Finding the Crypto Terrestrials. Quick reminder, make sure you guys are helping us out, if you can, supporting us by going to our Patreon, patreon.com/fearscapepod, or just go straight to fearscapepodcast.com/support. There you can join and become a monthly blanket hugger there and join that, or just simply go to buymeacoffee.com/fearscape for a one-time gift if you're interested in that to help us. Like I said in the last episode, we're going to be hitting up the MUFON UFO Symposium in July. We're going to be doing that. I got a baby coming, so you know,
I mean, I think it's they're done building, almost done building it, and then it's going to get painted and shipped, right? That's the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I got a baby coming, so if you guys want my registry, let me know. Hit me up on Fearscape. Email us at fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. It says send me the link. I will gladly send you the link if you want to send me some cool UFO baby stuff. I would absolutely love that. That would be super cool. My sister, Josh, I don't know if I told you this or not, but she had gotten me a, or well, not me, but my baby, Hazel, gotten her a Ghostbusters onesie. Super excited about that, as well as a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is going to be her first little stuffed animal. So super excited about that.
Very cool.
But anyways, moving on from that, I want to get straight into our segments here so we can get to our guest and getting spooky with Ryan Musgrave Evans. So the first one is Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
Okie dokie, Psychic Word of the Week, as usual, comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, Honey Bear.
You better rest in peace, honey, because I fell in love with that picture I found of you on the interwebs.
JD's been trying to track her down and he found a picture and now he's just enamored. So just putting that out there, June G. Blitz, I know you passed on, but you have an admirer in the Jersey Devil and myself. I love you too. But anyway, so I flipped through the pages. I actually asked, which is really cool, and this is true, Josh, I asked June G. Bletzer to I sent out telepathy kind of through my mind, and I said, point me towards something really cool UFO related. Because, you know, we've got Ryan on and crypto terrestrials, it could be mixed up with extraterrestrials and things like that. So I flipped, and the first, I landed on page 441, and I look down and I see this term called Old Valakus. And then she always puts in parentheses the kind of genre that it fits in, and ufology is right there. So she did indeed help me find
a UFO related psychic term. So I'm super pumped about that. They had a little pudding right there. But yep. Old Valakis, here's what this means. Says one of the first spacecraft to come to Earth and land beneath a mountain in Copper Basin, Idaho, believed to come with good intent as there was no one lying dead afterward. It seemed to be carrying some smaller crafts. So that's Old Valakis. So that I'm going to add that to our little topics list of things.
Can you spell it for folks?
Yeah. Old Valakis. So O-L-D, of course. And then Valakis is V as in very, A-L-I-C-U-S as in Stefan. Valakis.
Interesting.
Yeah. So good old Valakis. I mean, it even sounds like the name of an old ship, you know.
I know. It really does.
I was spent my years in the Navy on Old Valakis, or also, the name of a horse.
Valakis, yeah.
Or like, old Valakis.
You know, a lot of horses are named for their parents, right? So you got Pharaoh Moon as the one side, and
yeah,
I don't know, jumping Nancy on the other side, and then you like the offspring ends up being like, you know, Pharaoh Nancy or something. So it's like it's almost like it's this offspring of Valiant Thor and somebody else.
I kind of thought that too. I'm not gonna lie, when I saw VAL, I immediately went to Valiant Thor myself. So I did a quick Google search. I'll tell you what, there's not a whole lot. There's one thing that came up, and it says there's a painting called the Valakis, or referred to as Old Valakis. Spaceship of the size of a phoenix, was over 500 feet in diameter. This story was obtained by a telepathic awareness some years ago. Well, that explains why it's in this book, and printed in a psychic newspaper called The Prism from Mind. And that's M.I.N.D., a nonprofit organization in Hollywood dedicated to UFOs. So, so I did find about the only thing I could find. I'll take a look into that more. But yeah, if any of you guys have heard of the Valakis story or Old Valakis, or know anything about that, Jacques, looks like this guy's name is Jacques Drabier, who is the vice president. So he's a contactee and ufologist and psychic artist. So may do a little deep dive into that, Josh. Could be really, really interesting.
Yeah, it could be.
Cool. All right, Josh. Well, let's go ahead and move on. Let's go ahead and get to our next segment of the week, which is I got us a little bit of spooky news. Okie dokie. Got some spooky news. You know, it's always fun having to try to choose which... spooky news stories that I choose, because boy, I've been finding some humdingers now that I've narrowed my search a little bit. But I'm gonna go ahead and go with this one. I've got one I'm gonna save for next week, but this comes from the Mirror in the UK here. The headline reads, time traveler from 2028 says he's been alone in post-apocalyptic world for 340 days. This is a TikToker. Okay, so ironically, we we just talked about this. So we just sent out a TikTok asking people what TikTok paranormal high strangest rabbit hole they've been down lately, and I had mentioned mine has been time travel, and it wasn't even because of this article. I found this today, so excuse me, I'm going to have to find this guy, though. A TikToker who goes by Javier shares videos to his 6.6 million followers showing deserted scenes in Valencia, Spain, as he claims he is the only human left on Earth. Now, I do find it funny that A, he's got Wi-Fi and data, and B, it's able to travel back in time, the signal. So we'll see if that's mentioned in this at all. A self-proclaimed time traveler who claims to be living in 2028 has shared his proof that he has been alone in post-apocalyptic world for 340 days. He proclaims that he is living in the future and there are no humans left. He lives in Spain, and many of his videos show deserted streets with buildings and cars still in place. He has 6.6 million followers on TikTok. His account is called Unico. I'm not even gonna be, it's Spanish for only survivor, so I'm gonna spell this out so people can see this, but it's at UNICOSOBREVIVIENTE. Again, this translates to only survivor. He has since shared more videos of the city where there is no human activity. However, electricity and internet connection appears to still be available in the future, which is how he has been able to share the videos. Now, isn't that convenient? Javier is claiming he is still alone and has spent 340 days in total isolation with the world at his mercy. The most recent post reads, day 344. Alone in the world, I have toured cities and many more. What could be happening to me? In another recent video, he's visited a museum and claimed that it is normally always full of people. In the eerie clip, Javier roams around the museum that is perfectly preserved as no other human appears to be in sight. So since his first post, Javier has often shared updates of his life in the future. He has shared clips that reportedly show Barcelona, Madrid, and Seville. There was a barber from there. Other clips show Javier taking viewers on a walk past apartments and children's playgrounds, although the scene is like a ghost town as there's no people seen on camera. Another clip that appears to have been filmed with a drone shows him standing on his own beach. He claims that he is stuck in the future and is trying to find a way back to his time, which is now, and says the videos he posts on social media app proves that he is indeed the last human alive after the apocalypse. In a previous video, he asked his followers for help, saying, "I keep trying to find human life and I am losing hope. Today I got something to eat, but how long is this going to last?" Some TikTok users, of course, question Javier and try to debunk them. When asked why there is still electricity to power lights and internet, he replied that he was not sure and added that most likely there is a type of connection between 2021 and 2027. So I guess 2022 as well, since this is reporting on an older post. So,
well, yeah. And, you know, it kind of goes along with, you know, some of the things we've been talking around, you know, the idea of time travel, that multiverse and all that kind of stuff. How do you think even some of that comes out in the interview with Ron tonight? So, you know,
absolutely. Talking about what if 2021, in which he was last asked about, and 2038, where he's at, exist in dimensions right next to each other, and he slipped over to one. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's why he's able to get internet and stuff like that. This is going to sound really crazy, but what if he's picking up data from across the dimensional portal, like across the dimensional shift, that he's able to get that through that, and that's how he can send TikTok videos to now, and that time still moves forward, right? So I don't know.
Yep.
Very, very interesting. I always love anyone who has theories on time travel. Send them our way because we love them. So love them. I wish Art Bell was still alive so he could open up his time traveler hotlines again. Those were always some of the best episodes, man. Oh, some of those were excellent. So but Josh, let's go ahead and get to our segment. The last one that we have before we get to Ryan, getting spooky with Ryan, is we've got a UAP sighting of the week. All right, we got our UAP UFO sighting of the week. Josh, what do we got, and where's it from?
Yeah, so this is coming from MUFON, and it's actually happened in Great Britain, and it actually was. It's the description is pretty short. It just says, you know, it happened on 1/28, so just a few days ago.
Oh wow!
As of the time of recording this.
Yeah, I think the last one we had was from a couple of years ago, so this one's recent. I like these.
So the description just says that
I see that there are two orbs floating in my ring camera. You can see that they are synchronized and they maneuver around quite a bit.
That's all it says in the description.
Shortest UAP sighting ever.
But they did attach two ring camera movie videos, and I've watched both of them, and they're interesting. So the scene is, it's probably on like a garage. That's what it kind of looks like. And you see this guy's cat, you know, walking on the sidewalk or whatever. And kind of off in the distance up in the sky are like two lights that are on the video appear to be separated like maybe about half an inch, you know. Mm-hmm. So you know, put that in the sky, it's probably, you know, like 50 feet or something.
Yeah.
And they very much appear to be somehow linked, like in tandem, because when they don't move separate from each other, it's like they're constantly moving together. From a skeptical time type response, I have seen this before on my own Ring camera. Mm-hmm. And I have usually if I watch for a while, a spider produces itself, and it's a web that has dew droplets. Hmm. And the dew droplets show up in the IR light, but the webbing does not. And so I don't know that that's what this is. I mean, if you're a MUFON, you know, member, you can go out and check out the video. But that's what it kind of reminds me of, because they move in tandem, like they seem to be linked by some invisible connection. And that's why, like, for me, it kind of feels like a spider web type thing. But again, I could be wrong.
Yeah, very interesting thoughts. Yeah. So like I said, if you're a member of MUFON, you can check out those videos. We can't obviously post those for obvious reasons, but check them out if you get a chance. But yeah, could be. You never know. That we should always take a skeptical eye towards things. That's what we're here to do.
We were recently talking about it, I think, last weekend. We heard it on, I can't remember if it was a podcast.
It was Art Bell's show. We were listening to the show he had on Sirius. I can't remember that. Maybe it was called like Dark Matter or something along those lines. But yeah, he had Timothy Good on there, a famous ufologist.
And basically the phrase was, you know, being skeptical is needed. But a lot of times, you know, you have die hard, if you will, skeptics. They're more debunkers.
Yeah. We as investigators, we are skeptics. That's all of us are skeptics. But those that call themselves skeptics are really more debunkers than they are skeptics. Like we're skeptical because we're trying to figure out the truth of it. They're trying to figure out the lie of it. That's the difference, is what Art was trying to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, the videos are available. The last time there was some pretty good videos like this, somebody downloaded them and posted them on Instagram. So you might even be able to find it out there somewhere. But it's a pretty good little. We're not going to do that,
love our MUFON people.
Yep.
So. But yeah, cool. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate that. So all right. Well, we're gonna go ahead and get into our interview with the author of Children of Orion. Finding the Crypto Terrestrials, Mr. Ryan Musgrave Evans.
Hey there, blanket huggers. Stefan here from Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Got some good news for you. If you want to join in on the investigation of the mystery of the recent emails from the man claiming to be Terry Rist to Josh and myself, aka the Spooky Crew, and his advice on where to look for more high strangeness, or if you simply want to become a patron blanket hugger for some cool swag and behind-the-scenes goodness, go ahead and join our Patreon at fearscapepodcast.com/support or patreon.com/fearscapepod. There you can get Riskwatch access to the Terry emails themselves, the WhatsApp conversation about it all with Josh, Stefan, Santosh, and Olaf Phillips, and even any clues that are new that we have found in other Fearscape-related bonus content. You can even help out and add anything that you have found to help us dive deeper into the mystery. And remember, you can also just be a normal blanket hugger, as there are a few non-wristwatch tiers for patrons not interested in Terry Rist and that journey. You'll still have access to bonus interviews, articles, and live Patreon-only Q&As, as well as early access and discounted tickets to events put on by Fearscape, such as psychic events, tarot readings, etc. Or you can simply support however you feel comfortable, with tiers as low as $1. So join today. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking around. Like we said, we've got Ryan Musgrave Evans on the horn with us here, all the way from down under. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thanks, dude. Josh, Stefan, thanks for having me, dudes.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for joining us, dude. We're the ones that are the... I almost said the pleasured, but that sounds a little off color. So I'll leave.
But no, you know, when I first heard about kind of your book in the topic of it, Crypto-Terrestrials, it really struck a chord with me because that's actually the book by Stefan
McTonies.
Thank you. I had really just started picking that up and reading it. And then some other investigation stuff that we were doing kind of in parallel led us to also looking at Crypto-Terrestrial. So it was just very synchronistic.
I don't even remember who turned us on to Mac's book. I can't remember who it was, but somebody turned us on to it and I had found a copy of it. And I was like, Josh, you have to get this book. This is all the stuff we've been talking about, just using better terminology than what we've been using. And then just digging deeper, finding you, finding everything. I'm fascinated that Mac's not the only guy out there. So, well.
Yeah, I'm a real McTonies fan for sure.
Same.
And the guy was just so eloquent. He just wrote so well. And you hear him in interviews and when he's doing presentations and stuff like that. It's just like, it's just so articulate. Amazing stuff. But
yeah, and it sucks we didn't get more from him. I hate it.
Yeah, that's right. He was 34, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, when he passed. Yeah, it's just such a shame because I feel like he was just opening up to the things that he was discovering. And I think he would have really, really opened the door for so much more.
Yeah, we would have gotten a huge amount of books and extra speculation and stuff out of that guy. That would have been good stuff. Yeah, I think when I first discovered him a few years ago, maybe. And he gave me that term, of course. I took that from him, of course. Crypto-terrestrial, hidden earthling.
Yep.
Which resonated with me and the beings that I'd been having contact with when I was a kid. And I thought that they were elves or fairies. More recent experiences in the last 10 years, I reinterpreted as being sort of ET, UFO related, because the interaction sort of took on a bit of a different bent, like a stuff more usually associated with ET phenomena, like... tabletop procedures and things like that, clinical procedures, things. Whereas before, when I was a kid, there was not really that kind of stuff. The idea that, I mean, you know, Mac took ideas from Jacques Vallée, of course, but he gave it his own kind of spin because the idea that there's that continuity between elves, fairies, and other beings from ancient and old folklore and the non-human entities behind close encounter phenomena today, that there's a continuum of experience, that there's a good chance, and it's very likely that these are the same race of beings or the same races responsible for all of this over centuries.
Yeah,
so crypto-terrestrial is a really good word for that, and also that they're indigenous. I mean, of course, you know, McTonies is like, they want our DNA, they interbreed with us, you know, like Peter Curry, yep. and Antonio Villas-Boas. You know, you're like succubi or Lian and Shi, fairy lovers. They're compatible with us.
Yeah, well, it makes me think about, it makes me think about a lot of things. But so where I want to go first is the whole idea of compatibility. David Huggins, in his story, his experiences, I don't know if you're familiar with that, Ryan.
Oh, check out Love and Saucers. It's a fantastic documentary.
This is the artist.
Yes.
Yeah, I do know that dude. Yeah, I haven't seen the documentary, but I have seen.
Watch it. You're going to find yourself going, I'm with you, man. You just like, just fall in love with the guy.
His paintings are pretty cool.
They really are. I want one.
But yeah, I mean, the whole idea that basically, you know, they came and chose him really against his will further their genetic procreation because they lack the ability to do it on their own.
Yeah, he just ended up getting a little Stockholm syndrome and kind of fell in love with the alien that he was mating with and different things like that. And he is a big proponent of it now.
Right, yeah. Well, I think I'm a bit guilty of that as well, of the Stockholm syndrome. Perhaps people could interpret it in that way with my own experiences too, because I, you know, I have very strong emotions towards some of the beings that I've interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps you could interpret it as Stockholm syndrome or whatever, but that I've been brainwashed or whatever, but I like it. So, you know,
We do too. We've had our experiences too. Yeah.
Oh, you have? Oh, cool. Very cool.
Oh yeah. I know, for me, for sure. And yeah, it's just, I don't know what other term to use. You know, it's like it's such a phenomena that's still, people are afraid to touch, right? So it's like there's not a real term for it, and Stockholm's about the closest thing, especially in terms of Huggins's case, because he was taken against his will, right? So there was that feeling there was that sense of kidnapping and you know, being brainwashed for him. So I mean, it fits him more than anything.
And then I think it, you know, something that I've read or heard recently is the idea that a lot of these entities don't talk to us, right? They, and Ryan, you might have different firsthand experiences of this, but they communicate to us through emotional states or colors, or it's a deeper conversation than words. And so because of that, it has a different impact on us emotionally than just words.
Yeah, for sure. In my own experience, some of it's linguistic, some of it's abstract ideas and notions, some of it's visual, mm-hmm. There's been on occasions where I could not see out of my own eyes because of the landscapes and images that are like flicking across my mind's eye, mental, projected by them, presumably when they're there, but also abstract notions. Certain ideas and understandings about things, and having sort of aha moments that I think that I attribute to them as being intrusive thoughts, as being some kind of manipulation, but also linguistic, in the sense of more sort of stereotypical telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of it is that it's like a silent voice that communicates. That's either obviously masculine, obviously feminine, or neutral. It can be any of those three things. Sometimes, so even though it's noiseless, somehow it still has a masculine feeling sometimes, or a feminine feeling, or neither in particular. Communicating a packet of information, like, but still linguistically, but a sentence that all of a sudden is present and represented in my mind much faster than it could take someone to utter it,
right.
Express it verbally.
To hear it, have the brain translate it, and present it back to you in a mechanism you understand.
Well, and even then, we're trying to describe these in human terms, right? The way that we can, how we can understand things, we still have to try to explain it through our understanding and learning, which is the interesting part of it all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
lots of presumptions and interpretations that might not really be spot on, but they're highly manipulative, you know, like, and I say, you know, I like them, I dig them. Of course, I don't know where my ideas begin and end to some extent, and to how much that is a manipulation where,
right,
you know, in that kind of Stockholm syndrome kind of way, maybe where it's like that, or I feel an intense affiliation for them. I feel like an outsider to society in certain respects. I feel like I've never really belonged. I sort of look at their world and feel like that's interesting. I was raised by a family that was sort of, I don't know if you'd call it cultish, but just sort of different outside mainstream society to such an extent that we had our own little tribal views and understandings about the nature of the world that weren't quite mainstream. We were stigmatized, subjected to ridicule, especially my older siblings that are quite a bit older than me, when my family moved to that town, subjected to a lot of ridicule. We felt like fringe dwellers. We felt like societal beings on the fringes of mainstream reality, which is what the crypto-terrestrials are as well. So there's this sort of deep-seated sort of appreciation for what they feel. Because they seem to, they have mixed emotions as well. They do want to be accepted. They right. do want to be considered to be just another race of human, like of humanoids living here on this world.
Right.
I mean, exactly what they are, you know, you could, I call them in my book Homo Orionis, O-R-I-O-N-I-S, just because they've had a relationship with the middle star in Orion's belt for a certain mm-hmm. period of time, even though being originally from Earth. Whether or not you want to call them Homo Orionis or Homo sapiens Orionis, so mm-hmm. not actually a separate species, but rather a separate subspecies. Mm-hmm. Right. They call us Homo sapiens sapiens to distinguish us from them. I mean, if they're interbreeding with us, there's this very close genetic affiliation. And of course, technology, maybe they've got advanced technology that can sort sure. of bend the rules a little bit, but still, right. you know.
Well, I mean, like the Neanderthal, I mean, we were able to breed with the Neanderthal. I mean, hell, you hear people all the time doing their ancestry.com, not a sponsor, doing their thing and finding that they have 1% Neanderthal in them still, even though the Neanderthals are extinct. You know, here's another yeah. subspecies. That, yeah, why could we not?
That's right. Yeah. Now, I didn't realize. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, just the fellow you were talking about before that does the art. What's his name again? Sorry.
David Huggins.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they'd communicated to that guy, to David, that they had problems reproducing themselves and require us.
Yeah,
because that's interesting, because that's what they've said to me as well. And of course, that was the presumption as a hypothetical thing, of course, that Mac Tony's built into his crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, that kind of idea yeah. that they seem to require us to further themselves or to repair their own genes. That's interesting.
Yeah. The next thing that came to my head was the whole idea of the Darrow and Tarot with the Shaver mystery.
The Hollow Earth.
Okay. And
because I mean, yeah, we talk about fairy lore and all these other lores all kind of being similar to the same thing, which is a theory Josh and I've had since long before we started this podcast as well. But yeah, is this the more and more we read of Hollow Earth stuff, Shaver mystery, Darrow and Tarot, how much that also fits into that mold?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a look into that because when I was reading about Mac Tony's at first, people had said that he was just basically regurgitating those ideas. But as I read into Mac Tony's stuff, of course, there were differences, and he wasn't suggesting all of the things. He wasn't just mimicking someone else.
Right.
Yeah, those ideas are fairly compatible, aren't they? I mean, the crypto-terrestrials themselves, as far as I'm aware, and also Mac Tony's in his hypothesis suggested, aren't living in a hollow earth. Their habitations are much more superficial in the sense that they're not that deep underground. They're in mountains. Yeah. They are under the ocean. They are under the earth. They are subterranean, but not in the sense of there being this hollow earth kind of notion, which is another claim, again, much larger, of course.
Yeah, I think the hollow earth is more of just become a sticker people put on things now for any type of creature that just happens to live underground or not on the normal earth.
I mean, we talked about it with lava tubes and things like that are still subterranean. They get oftentimes grouped together as hollow earth, but really, you know, some of those lava tubes are so massive that you could fit, you know, 100 million people within them, you know, spread across. So, you know, bottom line, the idea of hollow earth isn't necessarily like the core of the earth is hollow, but there are hollow spaces within the earth where these things, you know, other races could be living.
Yeah.
And the idea that maybe that's where Atlantis is.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Atlantis. Yeah.
You don't?
I don't know. I've never really researched Atlantis. I know that it crops up a lot in, you know, the UFO scene and paranormal scene. And also, you know, the New Age scene.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
Kind of stuff, New Age. It's all about Atlantis and crystals.
And Lemuria.
Yeah.
Lemuria. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. I mean, the dudes, the crypto terrestrials, they, the ones, okay. Your listeners are most likely going to be familiar with Charles James Hall. I'll very, very quickly, if it's okay, just give a little bit explanation about Charles Hall. Charles Hall claims to have been stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in the 60s as a weather observer, like just going out into Indian Springs with a theodolite and sending balloons up and you know, measuring the speed and direction of the wind and radioing that back in or calling that back in. He did that for 2 years and claims to have had regular and prolonged interaction with a group of humanoids that whistled, chirped, barked, were tall, fair, huge blue eyes, fine white hair or blonde hair, subterranean dwelling, lived in the mountains there, sort of honeycomb mountains and in the old mines and things like that. Behaved in ways reminiscent of poltergeist activity, you'd say, as well, and some of the stuff they'd subject him to in his shed that it was on site there, that would wear luminous suits and float around and look like a will-o-wisp at dusk on the horizon, that spoke directly into his mind. When I first came across Charles Hall's writings, it was a fair few years ago now. I'm not quite sure how many years ago it would be. I recognized that as immediately. And I've been doing a little bit of research into UFO stuff because I've been having experiences that were more ET-like rather than sort of more strictly sort of fairy-like or elf-like or what I thought was that. And I'd researched a few different dudes. So I'd looked at Billy Meyer. I don't know what you guys think of Billy Meyer. I don't believe the dude. I'll just say that right now. But what I did is I looked at Billy Meyer and I was like, oh, this is interesting because tall, fair beings with blue eyes, this is like the stuff I've been experiencing. And I was looking into that and I was like, oh, no, I don't know about this dude. But I came across Millennial Hospitality series of books written by this guy, Charles Hall, who claims to have been stationed at Nellis, as I said. And I was like, these are identical to the beings that I've been having interactions with, even down to the barking, whistling, chirping language. Certain aspects of my interactions above and beyond what he seemed to have, them wearing these dark suits with like a nasal appendage that hangs down the front of their face, with a breathing device, with goggles that glow red at night, with like fake claws on the ends of their fingers, and they cloak and can pass through walls. These suits, I didn't really associate that with Charles Hall, and he didn't talk about that kind of thing, but I have seen them as well in the luminous suits, especially when I was a kid, levitating up and down. So that just gave me an intense interest in Charles Hall. So I just really got into his books. Okay. But the Nahuishlin, that's a description of Nahuishlin anyway, the description I just gave of the tall whites, you know, the Gaelic fairies. Tall, fair beings, well, one of the races of the Gaelic fairies, the Nahuishlin, the gentry, subterranean-dwelling beings, tall and fair, speak to you straight into your mind, behave as poltergeists, move stuff around, play tricks on you, live in the earth. And you know, there was this connection then that I saw between the elves, my own experiences, and Charles Hall. Now, they've told me lots of different things about the nature of themselves. And these are the beings that I've decided to label cryptoterrestrials after Mactonians, you know, but it's a very particular group. And they have said they call themselves the Majina. And I spell that M-A-J-E-E-N-A. I could have spelled it another way, I suppose, but that's just what came to me at the time when I was trying to coin a spelling for what I was hearing them say. They said their name is, we are the Majina. They've said it a couple of times. I've deliberately asked them if I'm getting this pronunciation right, and they say yes. That's when I started to make associations as well between the Wanjana, in the Kimberley, of the petroglyphs, of the huge, the beings, big eyes, in the Kimberley, that are called the Wanjana. And one day I was like, hold on a second. And I was just like, is that the same word? Is that the same word? And I was thinking maybe this word was communicated to the Indigenous Australians millennia ago as a word for themselves, as they did for me. So they're the beings, basically. And Charles Hall, I've tried to get in contact with Charles Hall. It's very difficult to get in contact with the man. It's very difficult to get past the gatekeeper that is his spouse. She does all of his you know, emails and social media stuff.
Yeah.
She was not interested in hearing from me at all and shut me down and was like, basically, don't you put too many quotes from my husband's books in your book. Thank you very much. And I was like, okay, right. Anyway, so unfortunately, I've never been able to have a yarn with Charles Hall himself. So they're the dudes anyway. That's what I'm choosing to call crypto-terrestrials. And there are other races, but they're the primary one that I've written my book about.
Interesting. I know you had mentioned having some experiences. Would you be open to sharing, you know, one of your earliest experiences of how you, not how you got into this, but how your first experience with them?
Well, I have experiences. I had a fair few of these experiences when I was little. So like elementary school age, or maybe, and also younger, you know, of waking up in the middle of the night, not being able to wake any of my family, some other siblings and my parents, just being, they're dead to the world. I just can't yep. wake them up. I'm scared. I'm on my own. And I feel drawn to go outside where there's luminous people levitating that I thought were harlequins. Also darker people, dark skinned beings with claws, with glowing red eyes, leaning against the fence, watching smaller beings, smaller luminous ones, leaping up in my face. They were like little puppets running around on all fours, galloping. So I had a few of those kinds of experiences. And another one where I was felt summoned outside, and there was a tall, dark shape standing on a boat, like a yacht, a sailboat in my dad's front yard that he built. There's a sailboat sitting there on props. When I went out there, there was this tall, big, like a shadow person, I suppose you'd say, that leapt down onto me, grabbed me and threw me into what I thought was a sack. And then I could feel myself knocking against its back as we were moving at an incredible speed. And then I was screaming, and they stopped and they opened it and they put their long hand in and started stroking me as though they wanted me to stop. Closed it again and then just started racing off again. And then I had missing time and I was back at home screaming. Poltergeist activity, things being borrowed to be returned and things like that. I had a lot of that happen. My parents still do in that same house. They're in their 80s now. They still live in the house I grew up in when I was a kid. They have their own stories to tell. They had experiences when they were kids. They still have things going missing and replaced and all that kind of stuff in that house. But so a daytime one that I talk about a fair bit, I often give this as an example because it was a daytime encounter that was just so vivid and raw. I was quite young at the time. I would have been just a month shy of turning 5. I was quite young. I have a lot of memories from when I was 4, though. That's basically when I felt like my consciousness was switched on. I don't have many memories when I was 2 or 3, but once I turned 4, I've got heaps of memories being 4.
Same. Four is when my abduction experience happened, was 4. And yeah.
Okay, cool. After I finish this, do you mind talking about that? I'd be interested.
Sure. In hearing about I'll talk a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. So this being was behind a tree anyway, behind a pine tree. And it looked like it had, I could see, like it was looking out to either side of the tree. Long fingers, a triangular shaped head, big black eyes, and what looked like ridges on the top. And I always thought of it as looking like a mask, like it wasn't the being's actual face. I thought it was some kind of, later on I interpreted that as being some kind of tree spirit or a fairy or an elf, and got intensely interested in the Celtic fairy faith and neo-paganism, Wicca and druidry and all this kind of stuff as a consequence of this particular event, really, was the catalyst for it. But its suit looked like it was made out of the same texture as the tree. And so I thought it was like a tree spirit, but now I interpret that as being a part of its cloaking mechanism.
Yeah, I was going to say chameleon.
Yeah. And I've seen those suits since many times. The children wearing them, but usually adults wearing them. Military grade suit that seems to be capable of heaps of different wonderful things. Levitating, intangibility to pass through solid objects. Seems to have some kind of force field it can project as well. And also this device it has on the nose, which I'm pretty sure has something to do with resonating and amplifying sound. To mimic wildlife, but also to produce hooting and roaring sounds to travel vast distances. So anyway, I am very, very certain, 100% certain, by the way, that the Sierra sounds are Mudgeon. They're tall whites. They're not Sasquatch. I don't know if Sasquatch exists, but the Sierra sounds recorded by Ron Moorhead sound identical to the sound, to the way they speak. They use camouflage languages, animal-like sounds. They also do the and do this real hooting to cover them.
Yeah.
And when they're actually speaking their native natural language, I thought it was Japanese. And I was here speaking to each other and speaking to me at one stage. I can't understand it. I thought they were speaking Japanese. The Sierra sounds are sometimes called samurai chatter.
And I was about to say that.
When I first heard the samurai chatter, when I was watching David Paulides Missing 411 The Hunted, was the first time. It was like a couple of years ago, maybe not even a couple of years ago, very recently. I didn't realize the Sierra sounds existed. Of course, they were done in the 70s by Ron Moorhead, Al Berry and Ron Moorhead. I had no idea about them until Missing 411, and I was like, holy cow, these are tall whites, definitely.
Interesting.
And also another tall white experiencer, Julio Fernandez in Spain, 1978, the Soria abduction, S-O-R-I-A, taken aboard a flying saucer. Mm-hmm. He and his dog, he was hunting. Tall, pale beings with huge blue eyes, long, heavy chins, which is like, as they get older and older, their faces get longer. They end up with these really long faces with heavy chins. And they can end up being like 9-10 foot tall and stuff as well, but their faces lengthen as well. Because you can tell, if you just see the face of a Mudgeon, you can tell roughly how old it is. But so the huge chins, so these are fairly old things that Julio Fernandez met. He describes their language, and he says it sounds like a combination of German for its guttural features and Chinese for its monosyllabic features. But then he said it sounded like the cries of the martial arts of the Orient. And then it was like mixed with barking and things like that. And when a ufologist got hold of him and played world languages for him and said, hey, dude, of these languages, have a bit of a listen and say what language of the earth sounds most like what you heard. And he ended up settling for Korean. But, you know, Korean and Japanese, to my ears anyway, not being able to speak either of them, sound very similar.
Yeah.
Same sort of intonations, same kind of thing. He said they sounded like they were talking out of their stomachs and throwing the sounds and the words up out of their stomachs. Just a perfect description of the Sierra sounds, really. This guy gave as a tall white or Nordic experience or whatever. People didn't use the term tall white
back then. And you know, it's interesting because in terms of genetics, people, myself included, being a blue-eyed person, people with blue eyes, it is such a rarer strain that they say that every person that has blue eyes is related, that they come from the same line. And there are a number of theorists that do believe that they come from these either ETs or CTs that do have these blue eyes. And that's where that hybrid breeding strain comes from, is from that, including the tall blondes, of course, as well, which is why a lot of Nordic people have the blonde hair, blue eyes, and you know the old, like, George Adamski and things like that talked about the old school aliens being these tall blondes, that they are also part of that same line with the blue eyes that come from somewhere else. I just find that very interesting.
I'm fairly closed-minded as well, like I that's the thing as well, like a lot of the old encounters of, you know, what do they call it? Like the George Adamski, Billy Meyer type.
Yeah.
there's a phrase for that, the old contactee movement or whatever.
The contactee movement.
Mm-hmm. That kind of thing of these people that are like Scandinavian supermodels that look like Homo sapiens sapiens, other than being maybe more attractive than the average dude or chick.
They're Fabio.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. What's going on here? This is interesting. I mean, you know, those people might have had real experiences, but were interacting perhaps, who knows, with
who knows
Germans or, you know, actual Homo sapiens people trying to back engineer these craft and messing with people, maybe. Who knows? I really don't know what to say about
that. Yeah, especially during that time period, for sure.
But when it comes to the, like, the sharing of our DNA and things like that, I know that there's a lot of stuff in the community, the UFO community, about people in the world being hybrids, that the ETs or CTs or whatever are altering us and interbreeding with us, or just altering our DNA to make us more like them, mm-hmm. for certain reasons, best known to themselves. In my opinion, I don't really know if any of that's going on, but I definitely know that it runs the other way. Mm-hmm. That they are intensely interested in appropriating our genetic traits to a certain extent, the ones they perceive as being, attractive to them, that they need. They heal very slowly. They have allergies beyond what we have. They can die from a dog bite because of the germs, bacteria. The saliva. They have real problems breathing our pollen, and even though they're originally from Earth and they're compatible with our air to a certain extent, when it comes to breathing in dust and pollen and things like that, it can kill them if they get lung infections, the drop of a hat, and they cannot find a way to permanently correct these pathologies and maladies without gathering our DNA and using
which
that,
is interesting, like that. You said, how it can flip both ways. It almost makes you wonder if that's where asthma came from, right? We inherited that aspect from them.
You know, there's a couple things I wanted to, so the idea of the notion that they can't be in our atmosphere, right, because of the pollen and things like that, makes me think about some of the 1800s UFO sightings where there would be an anchor that would hang up on a church bell, and somebody from the ship would shimmy down this rope to try to free the anchor, and if they got down there for too long, they would die, like they were drowning in our atmosphere.
Yeah they're interesting, those old accounts, aren't they? Yeah,
even the John Keel accounts, when they were talking about some of the men in blacks, like where they needed to take these atmosphere pills, right? Because they would have these issues. They would need big glasses of water and to take these blue pills because of the atmosphere.
They were like start to turn really bright red. They mm-hmm. would take a pill. Their face color would come back.
They'd wheeze and stuff, wouldn't they? That stuff.
Yeah, they would start wheezing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, it's interesting. You talk about their cloaking suits, because one of the theories that I had a couple of years ago was that a lot of poltergeist activity is actually ET or CT interacting in your house as a cloaked entity, going through your cabinets, going through your closet. You just happen to get up and interrupt them. Your doors are all open, but you know, they were just sitting there messing around.
And the see-through visage that you see is just seeing through the cloak, essentially. You're still seeing a form, it's just see-through, right? Which would be a ghost in other terms if you didn't know what else to call it.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I think that CDs are responsible for most, saying all paranormal phenomena is probably too big a claim to make, but most paranormal phenomena can be explained by the presence of these guys. Mm-hmm. And the poltergeist activity, for sure. The shadow people, hitchhiker effect of people seeing UFOs or going to places that they think are haunted, and then something coming back home with them, investigating them, messing with them, voices in the house, heavy boots on the roof, sounds of people talking through your house. You know, your frying pan disappearing from the countertop and being found in the freezer. All this kind of stuff.
This is an example, right?
This is them. Or for the most part, it's them, I'm sure.
Now, you know, there are, you know, a lot of haunted places. There are places that are known to be haunted, right? Or they're sacred places or things like that. For example, in Kentucky, where we're at, there's Waverly Hill Sanatorium. It's always known to be haunted for a very, very long time. Always shadow people. Now, with the crypto terrestrials, like, you know, do you, if they're hitting a same location, do you think that that's because that is also an important piece of land to them, or a sacred piece of land to them, as opposed to simply following a family around like some entities are known to do? Like, but one, like a place that is consistently haunted, no matter who is there, who's living there, whatever.
They have subterranean habitations or
facilities. That's what I was gonna say. Is there an entrance or something close? That's the other
probably
thing.
Probably there's something under the ground there or nearby.
Which makes sense with Waverly, because it's on top of one of the largest peaks in Louisville, Kentucky. So, you know, there's a mountain right there.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I think that and poltergeist and high strangeness, shadow people, and that kind of phenomena are more likely, I think, to be seen in houses and on farms and ranches near an underground habitation if it's warmer weather as well. They follow the warmth.
So yeah, you don't hear a lot of abduction stories in the winter, now that I think about it, besides old Krampus tales or whatever.
yeah, they remain dormant, you know, like the mm-hmm. habitations, but also they're under the sea as well. So, all over the place, but certainly, yeah, like you were saying, Josh, that's the dudes, the CTs, you know, they haunt people for different reasons. You know, you might be part of their breeding program, and you don't know they interbreed with people. It's supposed to be voluntary, but you know, like you said, that the other guy, the artist, I've forgotten his name again, he said he wasn't volunteering, but it's supposed to be voluntary. That's what they say anyway. But the thing is if you volunteer or you're allowing this to happen and they've approached you and they've explained it to you, they don't let you remember that you gave permission. So then it's like, hold on a sec, this is a moral question. You know, ethically speaking, if you're given consent to something and then you don't remember having given consent anymore, is that withdrawn consent?
Is it still consent? Yeah.
Yeah, but that, well, they consider, yes, it's still active. It's still.
Yeah, that's right. I was listening to an old interview with Preston Nichols, the guy that wrote the Montauk Project, and he talks about the Montauk Project. And he was talking to Art Bell's, an old interview, and he was saying, the reason I can talk about this openly, because he's like, isn't this a government project? You're saying there's things you can't talk about. He said, well, those are things I signed for. With the Montauk Project, it was about mind control. They made us forget things. They used mind control, so they didn't have us sign anything because we all just forgot. It wasn't until these memories got unlocked that a number of us found each other and so and so. And so, yeah, there's that same thing. It's like, how could we give consent if we don't remember? You know, literally what I just listened to the other day was Preston Nichols talking about that same thing in a different context.
So if you're hearing, you know, weird voices in your head, like the silent voice in your head you have when you're reading silently to yourself, but sort of like not, it's your voice, but it's not really your voice. But if you're having intrusive thoughts like that, images, hearing things in your house, dark shapes over the top of you, feeling hands on you in the middle of the night, and this kind of stuff, and you don't know why, it is a possibility that you have given consent to some kind of program that you don't remember giving consent to.
That makes sense.
It could also be that they are, if depending on how negative the experiences are, they might be deliberately trying to move you on. That you may be representative of some kind of, like for instance, what happened with the Sherman family or the Gorman family on Skinwalker Ranch, I'm very, very sure, is that they were not appreciated or approved of. An underground, imagine a habitation nearby. They had dogs. They had guns. They did not want these people near their children. The Magina did not. A psychological warfare is then waged with a family to move them on, to be perhaps replaced by another family that's more amicable to them or approved of.
That makes so much sense.
They might not have desires to like set traps and hunt deer in the nearby forest. Or if you can continuously, as a group of crypto-terrestrials, continuously create a myth in the local Homo sapiens community that there is a place that no one is meant to go that is foreboding. If you live there, your livestock will be killed. Your dogs will be killed. You'll be afraid. There'll be people walking around your house at night. You'll have feelings of visceral fear for no reason.
That could explain cattle mutilations.
Yeah, cattle mutilations. Well, that is, but I'm very sure that is what cattle mutilations are. I mean, I know there's lots of different theories out there, but if it's not the total reason, it's at least the primary reason, because the fairies and the elves in fairy lore, the Gaels, the Celts of Northern Europe, they knew that you don't graze livestock near a fairy habitation or they'll kill your cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just a thing that everyone understood. You don't do that.
It's interesting because it's just like, I was just watching something on the Chupacabra and they were talking about that. The original Chupacabra sightings were near a mountain, and they were, what they saw was this tiny being, no more than 3 feet tall, that eroded into the modern day, what we think of as Chupacabra. But the original sightings were exactly what you're talking about. And that it was the cattle that was being mutilated and things like that. And they moved their farm. And it also reminded me of the Kelly Hopkinsville goblins in Kentucky from the 1950s, that family on the farm. What you had just said is it did indeed that they were being attacked. It sounded like they were being run off.
Yeah,
that's exactly. They had the illuminescence. I mean, the whole nine yards, everything you've talked about, even the wrinkled heads, everything.
And it makes me also think about, one of the theories that I've voiced and people get mad at me about is that the idea that Mothman was not a bird, but actually a man in a suit.
And when you were talking about the black ones with the claws, and that's what
the
I was
red
thinking.
Eyes, and all that kind of stuff. It really makes me wonder if Mothman was trying to run somebody off of the Point out of the Point Pleasant area.
Well, look what they were doing at the main areas,
right?
So,
yeah.
Well, I've seen these suits, and they, when they're levitating, they can blur off and kind of look like they've got wings, even though they don't have wings. And the guy Mark Randall, who did the cover for the book, I don't know if this is just going to be audio or you.
Yeah, it's audio, but we'll be putting a link to the book.
We'll put a link to the book. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I did some sketches of what I call Boas suits, named after Antonio Villas Boas, because I think his case is like the first in modern UFO era where they talk about these sort of dark suits being worn by pale beings. But I'd be surprised personally if the Mothman myth hasn't come about because of military grade CT suits, but maybe there's something else doing some of it as well. Something else that can be, there's Mothman, but their suits definitely give a generally tall, skinny beaks, have very long necks, especially as they get taller, really long fingers, 4 fingers, and they have these fake claws on them, and one thumb, a vestigial thumb further up their hand, and their fingers turn in on themselves, like their palms, they become prehensile and they oppose each other. The 4 fingers oppose each other, and so their fingers can like do the real Spock thing much further around than ours can. But when you see them, they look like Mothman, basically, or like some of the descriptions of Mothman. Maybe sometimes Mothman's described as not actually having a neck.
Right.
Yeah.
Lots
heard
of Mothman
that too.
Descriptions are really lanky, sickly appearance to them, but anyway,
I wonder if that's where the Wendigo legends come from, again, to keep people out of the woods in the wintertime and things like that. If there's a you go in the woods, the Wendigo will get you and eat you and all that kind of stuff. So
just like disinformation campaigns they're running against us and through our communities as folklore and things like that, for sure. And these creatures, like cryptids, like let's say, Bigfoot type looking creatures, big hairy hominid like creatures, or giant wolves, or giant canids of other descriptions that have like big bushy tails, or like small dinosaur like creatures and things like that, that can occur at places like Skinwalker Ranch, or, like that ranch in Colorado. I can't remember what people call it nowadays, but Timothy Good wrote about it in his book. And I think Colin Kelleher and George Knapp mentioned it in one of the chapters of their Skinwalker Ranch book as well. But a twin case to Skinwalker Ranch in Colorado, that had the same kind of phenomena, like, UFOs, Bigfoot, giant wolves, giant dogs, disembodied voices, poltergeist activity, people being cattle mutilations and all this kind of stuff. But, like the Sherman family or the Gormans, they were known as at one stage, but I think their real name was Shermans at the Skinwalker Ranch. They saw these giant wolves, and fired high-powered rifles at them and threw bits of flesh out the back of them, and the animal didn't respond as if it had any pain response. Trotted off, and then they follow the trails, and it's gone. It's been beamed up by Scotty. And they pick up, Colm Kelleher was saying, pick up a bit of flesh, and I don't think he wasn't there to pick it up, but I've heard him talking about how the rancher picked up a piece of flesh, and it was decaying.
Yeah.
Now, so what are these things? And is Bigfoot partly explainable as well, sometimes as being part of this kind of psychological warfare, some kind of entities that are like transitory life forms, perhaps, being implemented somehow, that aren't really alive, that are being used to expel us from places, monstrous to us.
There's a in that. I'll also go back to the Shavy mystery. They talk about the tarot having a ray that they can point at humans and make you see things or make you experience things in a way that, just to terrorize you, which sounds kind of similar.
Yeah, there's a similar ideas for sure. Yeah.
Well, even you're talking about that, the nose apparatus sounds very much like this. Some of the descriptions of the Darrow have that. They're known to have these elongated noses and things like that. But I mean, as someone who wouldn't know how to describe how you described it, that's how you may just perceive it. It's just like, I mean, Josh and I were both like, that sounds exactly like that. It just shows you how all of this stuff is more connected than we've ever realized. And I think more people are starting to come around to that idea, but I still think it's a long way to go that we've got. And I'm glad there's people like you out there writing and pushing this narrative, because this is right where Josh and I sit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, cool. And I recently was doing some ancestry work, and I found that my mother's line all the way back to Scotland is the McFay, and it translates to friends of the Fae. So now I'm like, I've got, Fae friendliness in my blood. And I just picked up The Secret Commonwealth, which is written back in the 1600s, that talks a lot about the Fae and things like that in that area. So I'm looking forward to see what that uncovers for me.
Yeah, that's written in a very quaint, old-fashioned kind of English, as you can imagine. It can be a little bit hard-going, I've found, because of that, but definitely worth the read.
I've read it. It's fascinating. But I mean, I'm a 30-year acting veteran doing Shakespeare most of my life, so I'm good. It was.
Well, I actually found a revised copy that they tried to interchange more commonly used language today.
So modernize it
a little bit to make it easier to read. So
that's cool.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
But
some of the stuff that he says, that Kirk said, the Scottish minister, all the way back then, he even says, I'm pretty sure it's in that as well. I think there's a couple of other things, briefer documents that he wrote as well. But I'm pretty sure it's in that actual, the main one, the Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Swords and Fairies, where he says poltergeist activity is most likely due to our underground inhabitants, he calls them, like the elves, rather than being ghosts or demons. And he gives his explanation for thinking that. So even way back then, centuries ago, this guy was thinking elves have got something to do with this, because he understood them, and the community around him understood them as being able to become invisible at will, being present when you don't know they're there. Be careful about the kinds of words you use, because they'll take offense easily, and they could be standing right next to you in your kitchen, The Kirk stuff's good stuff, man.
The last 6 months, I've really been driving into the whole idea of fairies and elves, and maybe these things weren't so just folklorish, and they're still around and interacting on a different level. Like they're, you know, again, interacting on our plane of existence, but it's like they're off by a metric or something. It's like they're interacting around us, but we're not experiencing them. So,
yeah, I think there's lots of that going on. And then also, you know, even if you do happen to see them, they won't let you remember it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little, I think they really are a bit like those, the silence in those Doctor Who episodes where you got weird creatures. You see them, and as soon as you look away, you don't remember you just saw one. They can do that to you. And they said to me years ago, we apologize for the mesmerization. We apologize for the memory alteration. And I said to them, oh, that's okay. I'm sure you know what you're doing. You know, but that, I suppose that's a little bit more of the Stockholm syndrome again. I just presume they've always got my best interest set up.
You know, I always wondered, you know, but I guess, you know, you've been told so I got, you know, I definitely take your word for it, but I always wondered, was it on purpose or was it just a product of the way they communicated or the way they did things, was how I always had wondered, you know, was that mesmerization, that forgetfulness, just a product of what happened? But, you know, like I said, hearing from you saying that, you know, they're saying, sorry, this is just what has to happen, is interesting as well.
They have a lot of protocols that they've been building over centuries on how to deal with us.
It makes you wonder about that hierarchy.
How to remove us as a threat, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think they make a split second judgment where they wear in their helmets technology. I call them telepath tech. Charles Hall called it electronics. They don't seem to be any more naturally telepathic or psychic than we are, say, but they rely on this technology. To implant, you know, false understandings in your head, to cast glamoury, but also, you know, to judge you as a person. If all of a sudden you're there, you're standing and you've seen a group of them in a forest because you're hiking and they're there and their kids are playing or something, there's a split second decision they have to make as to who you are, what kind of person you are, how they remove you as a threat. Are you the kind of person that they have to instill visceral fear into the mind of to repel you? Are you the kind of person that won't work on because it'll just make you dig your heels in? Then they might fill your mind with love and understanding and endorphins and remove you as a threat in that way, so that you're just, you know, you'll love them to bits. And then also they have to remove, and then, you know, removing your memory, of course, is an element that they have to do as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we would do the same. That's the thing I always have to say to myself. It's like, we would do the exact same thing. If we had that same technology, if we had those same needs where we were sick all the time, but we found out that this species that's similar to us could provide us with the bubble, we would do the exact same thing. That's the thing that always fascinates me when people talk about any type of alien experience. I mean, it's like the same thing. If it is indeed just aliens coming down to experiment on this species, again, this is something we already do to animals in the wild, in the ocean, and we will do if we find them on other planets. It's not different.
That is definitely, I think, I agree. That's the key to understanding their psychology, is to basically put ourselves in that situation. And I think we, as you're saying, Stefan, we'd find that we're doing most of the same things ourselves, or everything the same. The psychology doesn't seem to be that much different to ours at all, if different at all, you know.
So do you think that there are people that are allowed to remember that they don't glamour?
You cut out there for a second, Josh.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you think there are people that they allow to remember?
Yeah, there are. And I think with me, and personally, it's not that I am having experiences that other people aren't having. I think it's more that they're more inclined to allow me to remember more. So I think there's people all over the world that are having experiences with these dudes all the time for different reasons. They just think their houses are haunted, or maybe they don't have any inkling at all that there's any interaction going on. That this is all happening, that there's experiences or contactees or abductees all over the place all the time and just don't know about it. Some people do, some people don't. Some people they allow to remember more or less. And again, it's you know, it's a selfish kind of motivation on their part. You know, again, like Stefan was saying, if we were in their position, we'd find ourselves doing the same thing probably. But they utilize people. So I'm not in any denial that I am partly a tool to them to act out something they've decided needs to be acted out. Mm-hmm. And they have future looking technology, like prophetic technology, like scrying technology, can see different potential futures. They can pilot reality in the same way that you'd pilot a research project or pilot a TV series, where they place a scenario into the technology and try to see how to work out down the track 10, 20, 30, 40, like the repercussions or future consequences of actions happening right now. This is how they guide their world, and to them it's sacred as well. Their technology, their prophetic technology, is considered to them to be sacred, and they rarely make high level decisions without considering that. And so they're always 10, 100, 1,000 steps ahead of us, because they've already worked out that if they do this, then that, then this, then that, then that, in 1,000 years they'll have the outcome that they desire. Whereas right. We're just thinking in really short term. Also, they have really long lifespans.
That's what I was going to ask, because that's part of it too. The reason we think in shorter terms is because our lifespan is shorter.
Yeah, and I think I just started wandering off topic there. Sorry, dudes, but
you're on topic for us.
We live off topic.
I was thinking, why did I just start talking about that? I was just sort of thinking, oh yeah, not being in any denial about the practicality, and like they're pragmatic. If they're allowing me to remember things that they wouldn't normally allow other people to remember, there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. They're happy about me writing the book. This was a dance that I did with them at one stage, where when I was in my 20s and I was camping in the Dandenongs, I'd had a really intense experience where I'd seen, like, I don't know what to call them at the time, but nowadays I suppose I'd say they're orbs or something. I don't know, they're sort of like lights moving through the trees. When I was camping on my own in a little tent, I saw their hands moving across the tent. They were walking around my tent. I was just lying there thinking, what is going on? And they were saying to me, this kind of like voice of God type sort of packet of information, but linguistic nonetheless, saying, why are you here? Now, I'd been interested in Wicca and Druidry, and I'd been wanting to contact mm-hmm. elves. So I suppose you'd say it was a CE5. It was a human initiated event, really. I could see.
Definitely thought about like that, for sure.
I have the terminology to sort of deal with these things now, yeah. But in those days I didn't. But they said to me, I said to them, I'll help you out in any way you like. And they said to me, the next day after that experience, they said to me, and I saw this little girl in the forest as well, this little blonde girl running around in the forest, out in the middle of a national park. And I was like, what's going on here? And they said, we'll hold you to the bargain. They said that to me then just a few years ago, back down here, back near where I was growing up. I moved back. They said to me, we'll keep that bargain. We'll hold you again to that bargain. And I was like, oh, this is all linked. Because it sounds stupid of me now to be saying it, but I hadn't really necessarily also made a strong association yet between some of the earlier paranormal stuff in my life and the more ET UFO stuff that was sort of like starting to happen.
That's what I've been doing lately too, is connecting it all in mine.
and they wanted me to, like, they were saying, you know, we want you to write the book, but we didn't want to have to ask you. And I was saying, tell me, do you want me to write it or not? And they'd go quiet. And then I was starting to write it, and they were like, thank you. And then I was saying, write it yourselves under a pseudonym. Like, why do you need some weird little hairy dude in Australia writing a book? And they said, no, this is the way it's going to happen. You will humanize the message. And I'm the kind of person as well that I couldn't do public speaking when I was a kid. I used to get really embarrassed and shy. I've gotten used to these things like podcasts and radio stuff now, but it's like I was just thrown into the deep end with all this kind of stuff. I am not the person that I would have chosen to have written a book if CTs have decided they want someone to write a book about them. You know, I would like... Not me, dudes. What are you thinking? You know. But anyway, this seems to be what's happening, you know?
I mean, that's the journey of the hero. I mean, that's Joseph Campbell. It's always the last person you would think in terms of the hero themselves, right? I mean, isn't that the way that it always is? And that's precisely why, though, you know, because if you were that person, you probably would be handled very, very differently. You know what I mean? If you were the person you think that it should be,
you know, Woody yeah. Derenberger comes to mind, right?
Right. Or King Arthur. I mean, you know, yeah. He's just a kid, you know, like.
Yeah, well, that is true. Yeah, someone who has an ambition or motivation to do the thing that they want you to do is not the kind of person they want to be doing. Yeah, okay.
You want to be humanized. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. And even then, you think, why not someone like Stephen King that already has a huge platform, or even, you know, some like Jacques Vallée, like why not someone like that, right? But it.
Or Whitley Strieber. I mean, he's already
Whitley.
This anyway, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm reading Communion right now, and so a lot of what we're talking about already fits into a lot of that. But yeah, why not use them? But it's because you don't want a big. It seems to me, if I were them too, I want a slow burn. I want this to slowly seep into culture, which is what it's been doing between, you know, your book, Mac's book, and some of the other theories and books that are out there in these circles. It's this slow burn, just like the stuff that's going on just with the U.S. government and disclosure, you know, those different things. It's been this slow burn since 1947, and it needed to happen that way. And I think the same thing here with you, Ryan. It is that same thing. You know, we don't need a Michael Jordan out there. You know, we need a, and this is going to totally blow sunshine up your ass, but we need a Jesus, a guy that nobody knows. You know, they know Jesus now, but they didn't know him back when he was walking around. So,
yeah, I won't be able to fit out the door in a minute when I go to walk out of this room.
Well, you've already got the beard going. So, you know,
yeah, I got the beard. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
but I think the slow stuff, like it's felt like you were saying as well, Stefan, with the slow disclosure. I mean, yeah, people want the Band-Aid off, and yeah, most people in the UFO community are like, we want to know everything, we want to know it right now. I suppose like a drip-fed disclosure, slowly seeping it into our culture. You know, ideas as well about, you know, that have been happening over the last few years, the last 10 years, really. You've seen this kind of idea of multiple timelines in a multiverse. Permeating children's television and superhero narratives, where you can't really turn the television on anymore without it being about an alternative universe where something else slightly different is happening, and this, that, and the other, you know, Rick and Morty kind of stuff, you know, like this is just everywhere. We're just 20 years ago, there was none of that. Now, I think this is not an accident, because these beings have the capacity to step across timelines. That's part of their gig.
Yeah.
And that is how they're related to us.
Yeah, there's even some theories of time travel that are similar to that, where that's what time travel is essentially, is that there are all these multiple universes existing at the exact same time. But that, of course, like we're saying, that decision takes up this way. Or there was even a theory I heard on Coast to Coast, they were talking about that Earth in 1963 exists at the same time as Earth in 2022 right now. So when those that are traveling through time are not traveling through time, they're going to the dimension where 1963 exists right now. So they're crossing over to that dimension. It's exactly what it was in 1963, but it's actually just another dimension where 63 exists now.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, that, what you just said, is exactly the way the Mudjana described it to me, right?
Right.
Whereas other people, I've heard them talking about it slightly differently, talking about how you travel sort of more like a Back to the Future 2 kind of scenario, maybe, where you travel into the past and all it does is branch off another timeline. So now there's two. Whereas the Mudjana expressed it, if you want to go back to 1960, you locate a compatible timeline where it is, for all intents and purposes, identical to the way yours was in 1960, but right now.
Yep.
And you step across to that. Well,
and that's right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I was going to say that's very, it's exactly the way John Teeter described his time travel experiences.
Okay, John Teeter, yeah, that name rings a bell. I think I do remember something about that a few years ago.
You know, he's the guy that was the time traveler that disappeared, so. But yeah,
right.
Well, I know we've been going here for about an hour.
I can keep going. We just hit time travel. I'm like, let's go.
I love the conversation, but I want to be respectful of time. Ryan, I'd love to be able to have you come back on sometime if we work out of time. I feel like you got a lot more to say. We got a lot more to talk to you about. But to give our listeners an opportunity, where can they find your book or anything else that you have going on?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, my book's on Amazon as a paperback and a hardback and an ebook. Children of Orion, Finding the Crypto-Terrestrials. And I have a YouTube channel, which is just my name, Ryan Musgrave Evans. And I put like a rambling sort of vlog thing on there. Maybe I'll make a video every couple of weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's basically me spilling to the camera about different memories I've had or how things relate together or different things I'm noticing in ufology and making a comment on that kind of thing. But and if people actually want to contact me and ask me something, or they think they have information to pass on or want to talk about their own experiences or whatever, if you just go to my YouTube channel and go to about and you go down to, you know, business inquiries or whatever, my email's there, and anyone would be welcome to say g'day. Yeah, thanks guys. I'd love to come back on again at some stage. That'd be
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, you have pleasured us. I mean, you have been an absolute pleasure. No, seriously, Ryan, thank you, man. This is the most incredible conversation I've had in quite a while, and I'm just absolutely thankful, dude. Like, we could chat all day and stick around for a minute. Yeah, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about my own experience.
Man. Yeah, I forgot to ask you again about that.
Yeah, no worries. Our listeners have heard it, so.
Okay.
But yeah, cool. We'll definitely have you back another time.
Okay, thanks, guys. Yeah, it's been great fun. Good stuff. See you later.
And thank you so much, Ryan. Wow.
We so many, like I said, the ideas and theories and things that Stefana and I have had, so many of them were discussed, with the interview, and really just kind of, I think, lit a fire back in both of us. Our journey has never stopped, but
yeah.
Just to hear a lot of these things,
even just talking to Ryan afterwards, it's like I shared with him a lot more details onto my abduction experience and some things like that, and it's got me wondering some things, and it played into some old theories that we had, some ones that we hadn't had a little experience with lately. So it's kind of re-lit a fire under some of those old theories and some things like that. And it's got me wondering, and man, Charles Ford, if you're listening, respond to this guy. Yeah. We did a little research into the Charles Ford Tall White's stories and things like that as well. And there's a lot of similarities there. And I think you guys could have a good conversation.
Yeah.
So I would definitely, if anybody knows Charles Ford, please point him in the direction of Ryan Musgrave Evans, because this man wants to share his story and with someone who knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, so. Very, quite an opportunity there for some commonality, right? So,
yep, absolutely.
And again, that's why we share the stories, right? Is to let people know that you're not alone. And so, yeah.
Yep. So speaking of stories, I want to get into our final segment of the week, which of course is Encounters from the Fearscape. Josh, so our listener story here for the Encounters from the Fearscape comes from a listener named Anthony down in Louisiana. Got a fun story here from them. But just a reminder to everyone, you can send in your stories to us, fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. They don't have to be ghost stories. They can be stories of an alien abduction. They can be seeing UFOs or some sort of cryptid, anything like that, or just weird things that you just don't know how to explain. Or you can ask us questions and the like. So send all of those things, or even we'll take third person stories that have been passed down, you know, folklore that have been passed down in your family. Lance, who hosts Mysteries of the Dark with me, he's got a story. His grandfather was a part of a traditional known ghost story that's in Taylorsville, Kentucky. That's fun. He's been trying to track down the news story that was done years ago about it. So it's like, you know, there's stuff that gets passed down and we want to hear those too. But anyway, so again, like I said, this comes from Anthony in Louisiana, and this is Anthony's story.
Now, pretty sure I grew up in a haunted house. Now, my siblings and I once all had the same nightmare of this younger teenage girl with long black hair whose shriek made us all shoot up out of our beds at the same time. We also in that house found blood stains that would then disappear and reappear at later times. A few times in that house, we saw face prints and hand prints in our basement walls, and they had blood splatter above them. Countless guests and female members and male members of my family, it didn't matter. They would come to the house and they would report to have a funny feeling when they came into the house and stayed. Now, anyone that tells me that it wasn't haunted, well, I call bullshit.
Bloodstains, boy, that's a that's an older haunted trope you don't hear a lot of much anymore. Though Kentucky has a number of what they call bleeding houses.
Yeah, the blood kind of coming down the walls.
Yeah. This girl that I dated in high school, she collected in the early days, you know, of the internet and things like that. She had like an old GeoCities type site, you know, Angel Fire type site, where she was collecting Kentucky ghost stories and places that were haunted. And she had shown me a number of different old Civil War type homes in Kentucky that had the bleeding walls and some things like that. So very interesting. But the handprints would definitely freak me out. But face prints, that's where I draw the line. That's where I move out. That's where I say I'm going to go live with grandmother.
So it's funny that this is the listener story, because on the flight back, because, you know, I just came back from Arizona again. Mm-hmm. it's like I've flown to Arizona more times in the last year. But anyways, and on the flight back, I went ahead and paid the $8 for the internet, and I was watching TikTok videos, and I came across a woman who cleaned her bathroom, cleaned the mirror, left, came back like 20 minutes later, and there was a face print on the mirror.
Nope. Bye. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
I mean, sometimes I put my face up on things, Josh. I one time stole your wife's compact mirror, and I put my nose print on there.
Yep. I know. I heard about it.
Yep. It smelled good, though.
Yep. I don't know where to go with that.
I don't either. I tell him to stop messing with people's stuff, but he's like the pink humanoids that Keel talked about. He just thinks because they're there, you're allowed to use them. I mean, second part of his name's Devil. What do you expect?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, Josh, just, you know, thank you, Anthony, for sending that in. Send those to us at Fearscape Pod on all of our social medias. Please go ahead and send us those stories, or just hit us up. You know, you can always message us on Facebook. Whatever, man. We're here. But Josh, I'm ready to get out of here. Thank you again so much to Ryan Musgrave Evans. Pick up his book. It's on Amazon. It ain't that expensive. Get his book, man. Check out his YouTube page. I kind of went into a little bit of a rabbit hole after the interview watching a bunch of his videos. He's definitely a rambler and a ranter, like he said. Kind of reminds me of the Walter Bosley videos where he's like, I'm just gonna get on and just talk about shit. Like, it's great. I really liked it. So I really like that, man. Ryan, you're a good dude, man, and I cannot wait to have you back on, because I think we haven't even scratched the surface with the conversation, because we were just hitting time travel. I mean, it's like we gonna have some fun with Ryan in the future. So we're on that. So before we go, just another quick reminder, Astral Stew is out this week. Make sure you check out that episode. We're talking about love in the astral plane and just all sorts of different paranormal style of love. It's going to be a fun Valentine's Day episode with Santosh and myself and Josh. Also, don't forget to check out Tech Talk on the Debrief with Josh and myself. Man, we are having so much flipping fun. That should be coming out next week, right? I think we should have a new episode. We're going to be talking about some fun stuff. So check that out. Check out the first two episodes. Make sure to like and subscribe. Let them guys know we have some fun followers. You can go to thedebrief.org or simply just type in the Debrief Tech Talk onto your YouTube search page and find all that fun stuff. And then the last bit of news, well, I mean, standard work I got to get out of the way is fearscapemedia.com. Make sure you guys are going to that. Check out all the other podcasts that are there. Wishful Drinking and Binge Thinking. Kelly just dropped season two today. Yep, and oh, God, she is so freaking hilarious, dude. I love her so, so much. So check out season two. Her first episode just dropped. She does this monthly, the last Monday of every month. And season two just dropped today. So go ahead and check that out and check out everything else. FearscapeMedia.com. Bye, Felicia. Bye, Josh. Bye, Luke Skywalker. He's behind me at all times. I love you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for tuning into Fearscape Paranormal as you do here on the Fearscape Media Network. This is Stefan with just a reminder to keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. Things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. FearscapePodcast.com/support.